This is the home of the oldies on WQMV AM 1060 at 93.5 FM, Waverly, Tennessee.
Welcome to Tennessee Valley Views, airing every Friday at 8:10 on WQNV AM 1060 and 93.5 FM. Tennessee Valley Views comes to you live from the McDonald's in the Waverly Plaza and features guests that keep you informed about what's happening here in Humphreys County and our communities. And now, here's Tennessee Valley Views on WQNV.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Tennessee Valley Views. Wayne Coates, Austin Taylor here with you this morning. We are live here at the radio studio on this rainy Friday morning. We hope you had a good rest last night. I know we had a lot of storms move through the area, and I can't say I got a lot of rest last night, but we had a much-needed rain, so we're definitely thankful for that. We want to appreciate all of our listeners for joining us for Tennessee Valley Views. Especially want to thank Chemours. If you get a chance, thank someone with Chemours. Tell them how much we appreciate them for not only what they do for Tennessee Valley Views, but what they do for our community. And we also want to give a shout-out to McDonald's. If you get a chance, swing by McDonald's this morning. Grab you a cup of coffee, something to eat for breakfast. They got a lot of good breakfast sandwiches down there. Get your day started off just right. Me and Austin were talking about today and what we've got going on. We've actually got the Envirothon going on up at the fairgrounds today, and that's where have a lot of kids from different schools, high schools, come in. I think we've got around 20 teams coming in to compete on various environmental topics, including wildlife, aquatics, soils. So they're going to be competing in all these different areas. And by noon today, we should know who the winner is for this district Envirothon contest. So it's a good contest. A lot of these groups are FFA groups. We've got teams coming from not only Waverly but McEwen. Mm-hmm. So the county's going to be well supported from that aspect. But we've got kids coming from all over. Dixon, Cheatham, Houston County, all the surrounding counties coming in. So hopefully have a good morning. I'm glad the rain has kindly moved out. So should be a good day.
Well, I want to welcome all of our normal listeners on WQNV AM 1060. And you are listening to WQNV AM 1060, New Johnsonville, Waverly, and McEwen. We got bumped off the air there for a few moments.
And, did we?
For a little bit longer, a few moments apparently. Yeah, but we're back up on the FM was going fine, but the AM had decided to take a nap on us, but we're back again, so we appreciate that. We always end up getting a call saying, I can't hear you. So, okay, I'll work on that. And like that, that sounds great. And a lot of students, a lot more students are involved in that here locally than I think a lot of people realize. And like that. And it's kind of a cool concept y'all guys host over there. You know how many you're going to have this year?
I think there's 20 teams. Mm-hmm. And I think they're around 5 to 6 kids on each team.
Wow. So you've got a pretty good...
It'll be a large group.
You guys are sitting there around with, almost 100 kids running around over there. So hopefully you got a lot of candy and stuff like that. Really get them revved up.
And the Humphreys County Soil and Water Conservation District and the Houston County Soil and Water Conservation District will be helping feed these kids today, along with the Southeast RC&D. So we're definitely thankful for them and putting on this for the kids. It's something they do annually.
Yeah.
It was just this year for our area to put it on here.
Mm-hmm.
So the fairgrounds is a good place to put like that on.
And we want to say hello again to all our listeners up in Houston County. We've got a lot of you guys up there. We appreciate that very much. So glad to have you coming down here. Just don't beat up on us too bad. Bring your team down here to Humphreys County. We're hosting. Be nice to us. And like that. We do, again, want to thank McDonald's for the outstanding job they do of supporting us and Chemours. They do a great job of supporting us. We appreciate all they do to make Tennessee Valley Views on the air every week, and we appreciate that. We got a great guest. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, a little word from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
A thriving community is built by investing in the people who live there. Chemours Johnsonville has been a local job creator for more than 60 years, currently employing close to 900 employees and contractors from Humphreys, Benton, and surrounding counties. As Humphrey County's largest private employer, we have a long history of community involvement and an unwavering commitment to keeping our people and the community safe. We hold certifications that recognize our health, safety, security, and environmental practices, and our entire team works hard every day to continuously improve these practices. At Chemours, we know our people are our greatest asset, and that's the reason why we're one of the world's leading chemistry companies. By working together, we can continue to grow right here in New Johnsonville and provide opportunities for the people who live here. Get to know your neighbor Chemours and his mission to build a more colorful, capable, and cleaner world through the power of chemistry.
We've got a guest this week.
We do.
Yes. Joining us by phone is the representative of the Tennessee Firearms Association, John Harris, legal scholar extraordinaire, I believe is how he's generally titled here. I'm reading a card that he sent me on how to. John, how you doing, buddy?
Doing fine this morning.
Now, John, I always love having you on the show because we always get so much feedback when you're on the show. And I think Wayne, I think, has even said this before. One of the general comments we get is, he makes it sound so simple when he says it. You listen to everybody else, are like, what the crud did they just say? You know, the legal precedent set by the Third Amendment. But John, we appreciate having you on here because the Tennessee Firearms Association, we always do this every year. We encourage our listeners, if you get a chance, check them out. Tennessee Firearms is a great organization. They do a wonderful job. And we'll start talking about what all you guys are involved with in just a few moments. But this is a Tennessee-based organization, and John has been working to protect the rights of gun owners here in Tennessee since the primitive time when they thought all we deserved to have is a stick in our hand. Isn't it right, John? It was a long time ago.
It's almost three decades now. Yeah, we formed it in 1995.
Matter of fact, the first time I came in contact with John, was right after they'd passed the carry permit, the original one, and I was concerned over that time we had to have a bond. We had to be bonded to carry those. That was part of the initial law, and you and I, our first talk was that time period right in there when I'd contacted you guys about, you know, is this the way it's got to be? Because I had never seen that before. And we just kind of kept in contact off and on throughout the years. But, yeah, John, you guys have been doing a great job of this and done a great job of guiding us to a position to where full benefit of what should be an honest right is an honest right for us to carry a firearm. And you guys have done a great job. We appreciate it. And y'all are involved in everything. I want to point this out, not just Tennessee. Your guys' names pop up on constitutional challenges and Supreme Court briefs and stuff like that from other states as well, that affect, because that particular ruling will affect Tennessee. So you guys do a great job of being a guard dog for us on that issue.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, we try. We realized several years back, you know, the GOP has been in control of the Tennessee legislature and the office of governor now since 2010, which was ironically the same year that the Supreme Court decided the McDonald decision. But they came to TFA before they got control and said, hey guys, help us become the majority party, and we will see to it that your goals of restoring the Second Amendment to its full scope and force in Tennessee will be fulfilled. And we helped them because after about 15 years, it was clear that the Democrats weren't going to go down that path, and that the Democrat Party in Tennessee was going away from conservative rural Democrats to the national, you know, Pelosi, AOC mentality mm-hmm. that we see here today. But, you know, the real sad thing has been that when the Republicans made those promises back in 2008 to 2010, and we worked hard to get them to become the majority party in Tennessee. They've had 14 years now where they have literally year after year after year broken that promise. It was as if they said whatever they needed to say to get control, and then once they had control, I guess they assumed they didn't need conservatives or Second Amendment advocates anymore.
Well, John, you got to remember the definition of a politician, and I can say this because I've worked with them for a very long time. the definition of politician under, you know, politician this, and then you got A, B, C, D. E down there is they say anything they need to be elected. Let's be honest about it. But no, a lot of this has been disappointing on a certain levels, and let's be honest about it. We have made strides, but it really, no one wants to talk about the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And the 800-pound gorilla in the room is this. We, last year, I thought we were really going to have momentum to get to address that issue, which is the fact that the basic state constitution, our constitution, the state of Tennessee, has been used in arguments to enforce gun control. Because the way our constitution is written, it lends itself to this limiting of people having access to firearms and stuff like that. And it's an antiquated amendment to the Constitution is from the 1800s or something like that, that really needs to be addressed. 1870. Needs to be addressed and needs to be removed and that needs to be redone to match what the federal Constitution says on this. And they just skirt around it. They don't really want to address it, do they?
No, matter of fact, there's a couple of points I'd like to make on that for your listeners. And one is... Representative Reedy is carrying House Joint Resolution 38, which we fully support and helped advise him on, that would amend the state constitution, as you say, to remove the Jim Crow provisions that came in 1870 that purport to give the legislature the authority to regulate the wearing of arms with a view to crime prevention. So his resolution, his proposed constitutional amendment, needed to pass this year, then it would have needed to pass again next year, and then it would have been on the ballot for the citizens of Tennessee in 2026 to decide, do they want to amend the Constitution? The Republicans in the General Assembly, particularly the ones in the House and House leadership, and I'll lay this at the feet of Cameron Sexton and other members, the caucus leadership, etc., because they didn't even sign on as sponsors on the bill, but they have effectively killed that bill, which means they're denying the citizens of the state of Tennessee the opportunity to vote in 2026 to amend our state constitution. That failure, that abrogation of duty by the establishment leadership in the General Assembly means that the earliest the citizens of Tennessee could vote to amend the Constitution to fix this clause could be the year 2030, when we would have the next succeeding gubernatorial elections. That's outrageous that these elected officials in the Republican Party refused to even move the ballot initiative forward so that there would have been the opportunity to vote in 2026.
Well, you know, talk
the other comment is that In 2010, when they got power, and I mentioned this a moment ago, the U.S. Supreme Court decided the McDonald decision. The McDonald decision clearly says that the Second Amendment applies to the states by virtue of the 14th Amendment, which means that a state law and a state constitutional provision like ours, which violates the Second Amendment, is as a matter of federal law unconstitutional. We presently have and have had for 14 years a state constitutional provision that is itself unconstitutional.
Well, you know, and I think, and I know this, a lot of people think, well, this is way over my head, and I don't understand how to get involved or should I get involved in these kind of things. And the truth is, what you deal with here is, I think, an issue that because the average person feels like, oh, that's kind of high and highfalutin stuff I don't need to get involved with, but it affects them so, impacts their life so much, they don't realize that these are the kind of things you need to be talking with your state reps. These are the kind of things you need to be talking with your state senator about addressing. You know, and it's just as important as how much money goes to the education department or how much money goes to the highway department. It's just as important because it truly impacts your day-to-day life. And if we really look at this, if we should get heaven forbid, if we should get a Biden-esque type administration in this state and a Biden-esque control of the both houses, they could utilize this constitutional amendment to start cranking down on what they decide or what they determine is the right you need to have. And that's what I don't think the average person walk around Tennessee understands. And am I correct on that? I mean, they could literally use this clause to start squeezing down on what they see is or is not acceptable freedoms when it comes to firearm access.
Well, I don't even think it takes a Biden-esque administration in the state. There is no doubt that the establishment Republican leadership, people like Cameron Sexton, Randy McNally, to some extent Jack Johnson, absolutely a House member by the name of William Lamberth, that they have repeatedly, even though the Supreme Court decided otherwise in 2010, used this argument of we need to pass laws regulating the ownership, the control, the wearing of arms for purposes of public safety, example. Well, that's a view towards crime prevention, but there is no public safety exception to the Second Amendment, and the U.S. Supreme Court made that abundantly clear when it decided the Bruin decision 2 years ago, and yet we have a General Assembly that continues down the path because of its leadership of thinking and telling the public, I mean, just look at the special session from last fall, that gun control is necessary for public safety.
Well, and thank you for bringing that up real quick, John, and we're going to move into some other topics here real quick, but we really dodged a bullet on that special session. I mean, first of all, forget the special session for a second. They literally slammed the brakes on some very great progress that we were making on several of these key issues and key redefinitions of these laws that were progressing through the House, through the Senate, and then because of this tragic situation that they exploited and bringing in a bunch of agitators, they slammed the brakes on that. So forget the special session. You know, they always go, oh, we got nothing on the special session. Y'all, it was a major victory on the way they shut the door and slammed down, and suddenly no one wants to talk about any of these bills because of this. So, I mean, they scored a victory on that alone. But again, you're right, because here they are calling a special session, wasting money as far as I'm concerned, to address an issue that should have been the legislation was already working its way through that would have corrected this and would have made it, bring our Constitution back into a constitutional alignment. I mean, your organization, not your organization, but the Tennessee Firearms Association has been on the forefront of trying to get a lot more information out of that incident. You've been trying to get the manifesto, as they keep trying to call it, of this young woman who committed this issue. And they're like, well, why do you want to do that? Well, because you need to bring this into perspective. You need to understand access to firearms was not going to stop this young woman from doing what she wanted to go do. She would have done it one way or the other. What's the progress on that, or have we had any progress on that, to be honest with you?
Well, you're talking about the Covenant shootings and the manifesto or the writings of Audrey Hale, and you're correct. There are four lawsuits that have been consolidated where petitioners, including the Tennessee Firearms Association, submitted open records requests to the Metro Police Department last year, over a year ago, to obtain copies of the, quote, manifesto. We wanted to see the writings of Audrey Hale. What was it in those writings or that the writings could reveal that motivated her to do the heinous murders that she carried out that resulted essentially in murder-suicide?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Governor Lee, our state version of Joe Biden to some extent when it comes to gun control, his solution was let's pass red flag laws, which was a Neolithic knee-jerk response that nobody that studies these issues would support the proposition that it would be an effective response. But that was his response. And so what we wanted to do was, you know, let's determine what the facts are. What motivated her? Was she truly psychotic?
Mm-hmm.
Was she on some kind of prescription or non-prescription drugs or medications, mm-hmm. regardless of why she was on them, was she on them, you know, did that motivate her decisions? Was it a personal vendetta? What was she targeting somebody specifically at that school, and the other deaths were unfortunate collateral losses? You know, the manifesto could shed light on that, and we believe to some extent from what few statements the Metro Police Department have made publicly that there are some indications in the manifesto as to what is in there about what motivated her.
Mm-hmm.
Another source of information on that are some filings made by an individual named Austin Davis, who in his writings, and he was a Covenant School, he was somehow related to the church in a leadership position. He had a child at Covenant School within a year or so of the age bracket of Audrey Hale, and he's filed some pleadings that suggest that what motivated her was the fact, allegedly, that she and other students were the victims of inappropriate adult abuse while they were at the school.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and a lot of people say, well, what difference does it make if we see this or not? And I want to kind of point this out to our listeners so they'll understand. Because this young woman has been utilized as someone who, if she had never had access to guns, she would have never committed this crime. Well, that's not the case. And I think if you can see the mentality and the mental state of this individual through her writings, you'll realize that if it had been a gallon of gasoline or a propane tank, she would have went in there to do this type of damage. The firearm was just the tool of choice at the moment. It was not the, if it hadn't been there, but to stop this type of thing. And unfortunately, that has been used for a lot of what we saw at the end of the session last year, and a lot of what we're seeing on the floor of both houses this year. Is driven by this misconception because it's so clouded, because it's been hidden what truly motivated and what extreme she would have went to achieve whatever this goal was in her head. And so these kind of things are important to gun owners and to just the average person walking down the street to understand this, that it's you know, someone doesn't walk past a gun store and suddenly possessed by a gun, and I'm going to go out and do a mass shooting. There's a lot of stuff that goes into this, and they would have found a way of doing this, whether it was a firearm or not. And I think that's what a lot of people have a hard time understanding and grasping. I mean, can you go along with that?
Well, I do think that's correct. I mean, if you look at, you know, Parkland, Uvalde, the other school shootings, in almost all of those instances, going back to Columbine, the manifesto, the writings, the motivations have played an important role once they were publicly released, because they helped to identify what truly are causal factors and what were not. And they've also indicated, like with Columbine, that the tools of mass destruction were not just firearms, but they could easily be other items, like in the Charlottesville, Virginia killings, where the tool was an automobile driven into a crowd of people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Audrey Hale could have conceivably done as much or more damage at Covenant by driving her automobile at a high rate of speed through, you know, early morning or afternoon pickup and drop-off times.
And these are things I think that people don't realize, and that's why these kind of things are important, because they're being misused or being mischaracterized and utilized as a I hate to use the word roadblock, but if nothing else, maybe a nail strip on this legislature going through the House up there. That needs to be defined. That tool needs to be taken out of their hands. And let's have an honest debate about this situation. Speaking of honest debate, John, let's talk about the current session. Now, I know that there was a couple, we talked early on. We didn't have a chance to be on the air, but we talked on the phone and text back and forth. Early on, there was a couple of pushes for legislature that you were hoping to get through this session. You kind of touched on one with the one that Jay Reedy is carrying through. As overall the session, how are you looking as far as some of the legislation you want to get through, and And where we stand here is we're getting close to them wrapping up another session.
Yeah, I would say, you know, we've tracked over 200 pieces of legislation this year. That most of it were bills that reflected extreme degrees, in some instances, of gun control proposals. Most of those came from Democrats, but not all of them. There's a good number of them that come from these establishment Republicans. And I don't know that I'm actually speaking of two different groups of people, because an establishment Republican, by definition, is not a conservative, at least on constitutional principles. Mm-hmm. But there were a good number of very well-written, pro-Second Amendment pieces of legislation. Jay Reedy's H.A.R. 38 that would have amended the state constitution was one of them. There was a bill by Representative Monty Fritz that, as amended, it was House Bill 2082, would have taken Tennessee from a state that has been referenced to the U.S. Supreme Court as having some of the most restrictive, long-standing, I'm talking to the early 1800s, gun control structures. And that was, in fact, argued in the Bruin case, mm-hmm. that Tennessee is an example of a state that having an extensive, almost its entire existence, strong gun control laws. Monty Fritz's bill would have completely changed that. It would have taken us almost completely to constitutional carry in the state of Tennessee. The Senate actually had brought its bill through the judiciary, and it was going to the floor, but it was stopped in Senate Finance under the control of Senator Beau Watson. The House version of it is likely dead as well, because leadership doesn't like it. It would, for example, it would have also said, your listeners may not know this, but if you look at the nation, 46 states either have no regulation at all, 42 states have no regulation at all on adults lawfully possessing long arms and carrying them in public. So we're talking rifles and shotguns, public carry. Four more states, for a total of 46, allow it, but then you got to have some kind of permit. Tennessee is one of four states where it is illegal to publicly carry a long arm. Florida is another one. Then there's two northeastern states. And you got to ask, why would Tennessee be in the minority of states on such a fundamental Second Amendment concept when we had no such restriction on long arms in Tennessee until 1989? And his bill would have addressed that and repealed that provision. The House Republicans, you know, not all, but the caucus, so I collectively refer to them as the House Republicans, killed that bill. And so every bill that we've seen, whether it was gun-free zones, getting rid of the presumption of intent to go armed being a crime, getting rid of carry restrictions on long arms, passing criminal immunity provisions, which we refer to as the Rittenhouse, Kyle Rittenhouse problem. All of those bills, they were pending this year. They could have moved forward. They should have moved forward. They're sound Second Amendment proposals. The establishment Republicans have killed every stinking one of them.
Hmm. Well, yeah, and what I want people to understand about this is the fact that when you get up in the floor of the House, when you get up in the structure of the House, in the structure of the Senate, there are so many ways to sidestep an issue. There are so many ways to table a legislation process going through that it has become a stopgap. Oh, well, I'd love to support that, but oh, it was tabled, or it was this, or it was held over for study. Whatever it is, and it's in what people need to start seeing, whether it's on gun control or whether it's on the budget or whatever it is, this is their way of kicking the can down the road. And the problem is, you keep kicking the can down the road, eventually you're going to come to the can. And the problem is, the can's going to be a bigger problem then than it was when you first started with it. And I applaud one of the things that your issue, your organization does is they continually highlight this and keep it in the front forefront, because they are very used to putting this type of legislature in a closet some people someplace and say, well, people will forget about it. Well, you guys keep bringing it up. You guys keep bringing it to the forefront. You keep informing your members how to talk to their representatives about it. And so it doesn't allow them to bury this. It keeps them from moving it through and getting something done, yes, but at least they can be held a little bit more to the fire than they normally was. And that's one of the things that your legislative watchdog group does for us, and we appreciate that very much.
Thank you. And, you know, something I think is important, too, when we have this civics discussion that your listeners need to understand is, if, for example, we've got 99 House members. The House leadership, the establishment rhinos that do not support the Second Amendment, see to it that these bills are killed in subcommittees and committees on which only a handful of elected representatives get a vote. As a practical matter, 90% of the state, speaking through their elected representatives, never even get a voice on most of this legislation because the bills never make it to the House floor. And the same thing can be said in the Senate, that the bills typically in the Senate come through Senate Judiciary. It's got 7 Republicans. It's got 2 Democrats. Mm-hmm. But there are 33 senators. So typically what you see is as few as 5 senators are killing Second Amendment bills, which prevents most Tennesseans from having their senator have any voice at all on whether or not that policy change, that change in the law, would even be heard and go into effect.
Well, and also I think what people don't realize is that these subcommittees that are the gateway, these things get out, also have very little publication, very little publicity or oversight. In other words, they don't stand up and say, hey, we killed the bill today. It's done, and no one is not really highlighted that much outside of the legislative body. And so that organizations like yours that watch these bills go through turn a spotlight on what I like to refer to as the bargain basement part of government that normally is just ignored. You guys kind of bring it to the forefront and can point out, yes, it was killed, and these are the people who voted for it. That's information would normally be there, but your members have access to that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was like we've seen over and over again that it is the subcommittee system, mm-hmm. the committee system, and the way in the House Cameron Sexton manipulates it with his appointments that sees to it that these bills die. I mean, Jimmy Nafee, that used to be the Democrat leader of the House.
Very familiar
back
with
when you
Jimmy.
And I first met.
Yes, I know.
Yep. You know, Jimmy got so fed up with Second Amendment legislation that back then the gun bills basically initially went to either civil justice or criminal justice committees.
Yeah.
And they each had their own subcommittees. And he got so tired of it, he, just to poke the bear, so to speak, created a subcommittee called Constitutional Protections. He then packed it with anti-Second Amendment legislators and saw to it that all of the gun bills went to, quote, constitutional protections.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it was a farce because everything that went there died.
Yeah. Well, and another little side story about Jimmy Nafee, was that if there was even a hint of something getting through out of these committees that he didn't like, he would use the age-old standing that the speaker can become a member of any group and come down there and make sure that he had enough votes to stop it or to table it. He was very good at just suddenly appearing at these committees and saying, well, I've decided to table this or whatever. So he was exceptionally good at that. He really was. I want to touch on one more thing, John, before we let you go, and that is the recent ruling that a federal judge who assumes that they are the entire legislative body of the United States of America has made, where he is saying that it is legal that someone who crosses the border and enters America now has all the rights of an American. And he said that people who are here illegally have the right to bear and to buy arms. And, you know, which is kind of amazing because if a case had come before him of, with an American wanting that, he would have probably voted right the opposite or ruled right the opposite on that. Can you kind of touch on that for just a moment and why we need to pay attention to that? Because, it, you know, we go, oh, yeah, freedom of guns, that's a good idea. But, no, in this case, that's not necessarily a positive for gun owners.
Right, right. I mean, this particular federal judge, and it made the news to some extent, but I don't think got a lot of real comprehension by most, you know, whether you're Republican or conservative or Democrat. It really didn't get that much national attention after a flash in the pan, but basically made a holding, as you've indicated, that illegal aliens have somehow a right to possess firearms when, you know, he probably should have held that illegal aliens are de facto criminals by entering the country the way they do, and they need to be institutionalized, you know, put in prison or deported, mm-hmm. as opposed to being vested with rights. Because if you're going to assert, for example, that they've got a right to possess arms, then do they have the right to vote?
Right.
You know, where does that right stop?
Right.
And it's just atrocious that this judge went down this path, and I've got to hope that the supervising appellate court will reverse this judge and the silliness that his opinion puts forth.
Well, and part of the problem, I think, with this, and sometimes we kind of overlook, I think they pick their issues. And you're absolutely right. They're trying to establish a ruling someplace that shows, well, they have, because they're here in America now, they've crossed the border, so now they have all the rights of America. So they had to pick someplace where they could get support for it. And guns is an issue where they knew they could make a ruling on that, and their side wasn't going to make a big deal about it because most of them are anti-guns anyway. And our side was going to go, well, and now I'm looking stupid because I'm arguing against someone having a gun. And so they picked it for this purpose, and it's got nothing to do with the issue of whether or not they can have guns, which is not a good idea anyway, but the issue of they've established a precedent that they do have access and do have the right to have certain rights in the Constitution. So then you're right. Where does it go? If I get the right to own a gun, I get the right to vote. If I get the right to vote, I get the right to this. Yeah, I do process and everything else. So we need to watch those rulings. Don't just because it's dealing with a gun issue, don't start jumping up and down and saying, oh, yeah, it's a victory. But no, it's not necessarily the case. But they're more and more, they'll try to hide a ruling behind something they know the right will or the conservatives will not pay attention to because it's an issue that they care about. And like that. John, anything else? I want you once again to talk to our listeners about how to join your organization, be a part of it, because it's a great organization, and we appreciate all you guys have done over the decades now.
Well, I'm very thankful of the opportunity to come on the show and discuss some of what's happening in Tennessee and what we're trying to do as a nonprofit through the Tennessee Firearms Association. And I'll say this. This week, for example, you know, some of your listeners may be aware that the ATF is rolling out a new definition of what constitutes a gun dealer and what activities are going to require, at least according to the ATF, that individuals obtain a federal firearms license. And that definition is so broad that conceivably an individual who decides to sell even a single gun that they've owned, just to, you know, get rid of it because they don't need it anymore, they want to swap it and get something else, that individual may have to apply to get a federal firearms license. And so the TFA, recognizing that the Republican General Assembly has just completely abandoned the promises that they made to Tennesseans about what they would do if they got control of the General Assembly. I mean, just look at the spectrum. It's not just Second Amendment. It's they said we're the party of smaller government. Oh yeah, really? Then why did the budget go from $28 billion to approximately $54 billion?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're the party of lower taxes. Oh really? How do you explain a 100% increase again in the budget? And we're the party of the Second Amendment, but yet Tennessee has one of the worst reputations in the nation when it comes to arguing in the Supreme Court on truly recognizing the rights that the Second Amendment protects. So one of the things we've done in TFA is we have invested and are starting to invest even more in litigation to try to accomplish through the courts what the legislature promised it would do, but has refused and failed to do. And so, for example, we're presently in discussions with Gun Owners of America and the Attorney General from the state of Texas. And get that, Texas, not Tennessee, but Texas, on filing a federal lawsuit to challenge this new ATF ruling. Now, we'd love to be doing these in cooperation with the Tennessee Attorney General. We hope that the Attorney General's office will take a more aggressive role in defending our Second and Tenth Amendment rights. But right now, if we got to work with the state of Texas, God bless them. It's a great state, and we're happy to do so. But the point is that lawsuits like that, TFA's budget for a lawsuit, depending on what role we take, is anywhere from a couple of $1,000s on an amicus brief to a minimum of $10,000 if we become a named party in a case, to potentially somewhere between $75,000 and $150,000 if we're the only party taking up the banner. And so, you know, I hate to be the guy standing in the pulpit saying, guys, you know, we're going to pass a hat and I need you to throw some money in. But if we're going to do, as an organization, a nonprofit, what the General Assembly should be doing to protect Tennesseans' rights, then we have to ask the public for their support of these efforts. And that means not just becoming members of our organization to help raise funding, but to consider making donations, particularly to our C3 charity, which does have tax deductibility benefits.
Well, you know, and I think it's important for us to realize that the deep impact that a ruling like that would make, because, you know, this affects if I happen to have a gun around my house and I decide I'm going to try to sell them just to because I'm getting ready to retire, I'm getting ready to change my status or whatever reason, suddenly, you know, this is what they've been wanting for a very long time, is a way to track these guns that have already been bought. I legitimately bought my gun. That transfer was originally registered. It came to me. But now they're saying, okay, we want to be able to track that gun past customer A, customer B, customer C. And if you don't, you're a felon, or you don't, you're a criminal. And we need to realize that these kind of changes like this, they're basically being pushed forward by a bureaucracy, by a bureaucrat. We need to realize that these kind of things have great impacts on what we now consider normalcy when it comes to how we deal with our guns and utilize our guns in everyday life.
True. Yeah. Very true.
Now, John, again, remind everybody once again, if you would, if I'm interested in joining your organization, give me the website and talk a little bit about joining real quick.
Sure. The website for the Tennessee Firearms Association is TennesseeFirearms, all spelled out, .com. Membership's only $35 a year. Members, we can ask to consider making supplemental donations to help fund some of this litigation. But last year, we also formed the Tennessee Firearms Foundation. So it would be TennesseeFirearmsFoundation.org. That's a 501c3 that we can use to help fund public interest, public policy litigation. You can't be a member of it because it's a C3, but you can, at this point, make donations to that litigation effort, and donations to the C3 are tax deductible.
And, John, we appreciate you very much making it easier and better for us to join your organization. And I do encourage our listeners to do just that. Contact them at their website or directly and join this organization, because they do a lot of great work, not only as a watchdog, but also in helping shape and push the right legislation through the House and the Senate up on Nashville, and are very active on the federal level as well. And we appreciate all that you do and your organization does, John.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you for the opportunity to talk with you this morning.
Well, we look forward to having you on again. We always do. Always get some good feedback. And John, if you can hang on for just one moment while we close things out. And again, you're listening to WQNV, AM 1060 and 93.5 FM, Waverly, New Johnsonville, and McEwen. This has been Tennessee Valley Views with Wayne Coates. Wayne had to run on to take care of a little business. Like he said earlier, they've got a lot of the people over there with the environmental push and the different teams there. So he's going to go over and take care of the judging on that. Till next time, take care, my friends. God bless, and we'll see you down the road.
This has been Tennessee Valley Views on WQNV, AM 1060 and 93.5 FM. Tennessee Valley Views comes to you every Friday at 8:10 live from the McDonald's in the Waverly Plaza. If you or your organization would like to be a guest on Tennessee Valley Views, you can contact the program at wqnv@comcast.net. We'll join you again next week on Tennessee Valley Views. Have a great weekend.